seek, love, and serve boldly. And there is a cheat sheet. It's also written on the back of your orders of service if you want to take it home and memorize it. All of those words, they're up for interpretation. And without our interpretation and the life that we fill them with, they are hollow. I spent a few years with a congregation that will remain nameless. And when I was with this congregation, I really wanted to do good, bold work. And so I sought out their justice program and I asked them what they were doing. And I found out about it and it felt good for a little while, but it started to feel a little weird. It's hard to explain, but perhaps this example says it best, what felt weird about the justice work in this congregation. I was trying to leave on a Sunday morning. You know, sometimes the service is over, you've had some coffee, and it is really time to go. You got something to do. And I was blocked at the door. There was a woman with a clipboard there. She was the head of the social justice program, and she was stopping me and saying, "You need to listen to me. You need to hear me out." And she wanted to tell me all about this new work that she and the congregation, they were doing together. And she wanted me to write my name on her clipboard to say that I would agree. And she wouldn't let me leave unless I did. And I had the sense then that it wasn't just that she was asking me to do good, but she was showing me that if I didn't do this particular good that she thought was right, I was not worthy. I was not good. I did not belong in that congregation. And so I stopped doing justice work there. I did justice work in other places. One strong current that has defined our culture in America is Puritanism. We culturally, maybe not individually, but we culturally as a nation descend from the Puritans and what they had as the standing order churches. So in this country in the early years, there were what we called the standing order churches, and these were actually supported by your tax dollars. Did you know that that was true? That there were congregations here, churches that were supported by all of our tax dollars. But the interesting thing is that only some people were allowed to belong to these churches. They were the saved. And outside of that fold of people, well, they were the sinners. They were the damned. They didn't belong. And to be the one who belonged, to be someone who was welcomed into that fold of that congregation, you had to do something. And what you had to do was profess your faith. You had to show other people that you were worthy, that you were good enough, that you belonged. And different churches did this in different ways. So, what does that look like now? Sometimes culture holds on to aspects of itself, even if it lets go of the particular quality. We don't have standing order churches anymore, but I believe that that profession of faith has morphed, has changed into a profession of goodness, a profession of one's holiness or holier-than-thou-ness. It's morphed into someone standing at the door with a clipboard, letting you know that you're not worthy unless you sign up. Take a look at the picture on the front of your orders of service. So what I see there, you can probably see different things. It's someone with a halo on their head, and their hand on their hip, and their finger. I've earned this halo. I belong, and so I'm going to stand here and tell you what you need to do. I see this in operation in a lot of the places where I live and have my days. It's easy to bring it into congregational life as well. It happens very naturally. The question is then, how do we do justice work without doing this? without raising that finger and saying, to do good, you have to do it like I do it. How do you do that? I was at a dinner recently, and it was with many folks from this congregation, and the conversation came up, is anything that we do actually fully unselfish? Is anything that we do actually unselfish? Because in some way, we all get something from everything we do, right? I do a good work and I feel really good. I feel great about it. I'll probably even come up here and tell you about it so I can feel even better about it. That's the power of the pulpit. Nothing we do is ever wholly without meaning to ourselves. Nothing we do is ever wholly without meaning to ourself. It all comes back to us in some way, shape, or form. But here's the question. If we want to do justice work that is not only about us feeling righteous or feeling good, there's one question that we have to begin with. One, I believe, that we must begin with, and that is, who am I accountable to? Who am I accountable to? Michael Maziak, who joins us today, he's done bold service here since about 2004. He has been accountable to others. He cleans up after us. And we can be a messy bunch. He makes the coffee early in the morning that I need. Thank you very much. And he works to bring about healing where racism has brought injury. And he's tall.
Thank you, and good morning. I think I was born with this tender place in my heart for the disenfranchised, those on the margins. And I've witnessed the transformative power that can be released when we stand with love in opposition to injustice. I experience my calling most profoundly in my work for anti-racism. One important piece of the Journey Toward Wholeness team's mission is to keep the conversation alive and fresh around ways that our congregation can live into a multicultural identity. We sponsor a jazz poetry slam every year that's become popular with poets and poetry lovers alike. We also provide educational events like book readings or classes to help clarify the work of anti-racism. To me, the hardest part is making myself accountable to people of color. Intentionally listening to my African-American friends and leaders and following through faithfully on my commitment to stand in solidarity may seldom feel convenient, but it is necessary that I, who have inherited so much privilege, should be compelled to help bring into the circle those who come from a long and painful history of oppression. And finally, I'm deeply grateful this congregation provides a place where I can boldly build relationships of accountability in love, in compassion, and in hope for a colorful future.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Compelling, bold. You should have raised your hand for bold too, Michael. And also inspiring. I find your words deeply inspiring. Michael talks about accountability. In a service a while back, I asked us all to consider that question: to whom are we? To whom are you accountable? To whom are you accountable? And many of you reflected back in our typical Unitarian Universalist fashion, everyone! I'm accountable to everyone, which is beautiful and which is wonderful, but it makes service incredibly difficult. Imagine the professor has asked you to preach on the Good Samaritan and has given you 2 minutes to walk from one classroom to the other, and there along the path you see an aching, injured soul. Are you accountable to the professor? Are you accountable to the clock? Are you accountable to the aching soul before you? Are you accountable to preaching a good sermon? To what are you accountable? At some point, you need to choose whom. Who am I really accountable to? Who needs me most? So how do you do this? I imagine that your life stories, like Michael's, have led you in a particular way to yearn to serve some ends, not to the exclusion of, but perhaps more than others. Have you experienced or seen great poverty? Have you yourself been homeless? Has a relative been prevented from voting? Has one of you been excluded, rejected? Your story has already been written on your soul, right? Mark Lorenz's story also has.
Oh my goodness. So I've been coming here maybe 4 years, and you know, I thought I was loving and serving boldly before I came here. You know, I was involved in the church that I was in, and I served on the board of directors for the homeless shelter in Reston, and teaching people how to not become homeless and so forth. But when I came here, you know, oh my gosh, I was not. I realized, you know, for the likes of y'all, I was not even coming close. You see, I was born in a reasonably secure and loving family. As children, we really didn't want for anything. We had just about everything. My father was a military officer, so we had a good life. And we were trained, I guess that's the right word, as children. We were asked to, you know, say prayers. And every night when I would say my prayers, I would think and reflect about how fortunate I was to be born into the family that I was born into, you know, for this family, this life that I had. I realized that there were people in other places, in other countries, that all over the world they were struggling to live. There were children who didn't have enough to eat and were victims of war. You know, so I felt the sense of gratitude. So a few years ago, I got involved in the annual benefit that we do for the people Faith for Equality in Virginia. It featured the Gay Men's Course. We just had one just recently, remember? And, you know, soon I kind of fell into leading that project. Actually, Reverend Anya kind of asked me, and I said yes. In the way that, you know, she asks, that you say yes. But really, you know, I led the project. And I really became drawn to the project because of my history. You see, my brother's gay. And I witnessed him struggling throughout life. As he was a young child, he was different. He didn't know what gay was when he was a young boy. And as he grew up, he's made fun of and had difficulties. And while since then he's reconciled his sexual identity and is comfortable with himself, I feel that I do that for him, and so that others won't experience the same pain and the same struggle that he had. So this is all kind of hard stuff for me. You know, I find it hard to gather a few hours here and there and dedicate it to almost anything. I've got work, family, sleep, music, and all sorts of things tend to get in the way. And it seems that I can never find enough time. And there's such seemingly vast amounts of work that need to be done. And, you know, how am I going to help change this? But we can eat the elephant one bite at a time. We can divide the work up into manageable chunks, and soon enough, we've succeeded in a single project, such as the Gay Men's Chorus event, and then another, and another, and we start changing our local community, and then maybe even more.
So Mark says, maybe even more. He says, maybe even more, maybe even more. And Mark might mean, perhaps, that we could change the world with our projects. Of course, that is possible in small increments, but there's another more that I hear in that that gets changed, a more that is, I believe, even harder to change, which is ourselves. It's hard to change ourselves. This is where the boldness really comes in, because honestly, the hardest thing for me, for you, for any of us to change is ourselves. We are astoundingly stubborn, right? And I don't just mean the we that has gathered here this morning, though that might be true. I mean the human we. Neuroscientists claim that our brains are plastic, that they're malleable, but when you try imagining melting a brain full of plastic, it's not so easy. Plastic is changeable, but it takes a whole lot of heat and a whole lot of pressure and a whole lot of intention. We need, I believe, the fire of a spiritual calling to change ourselves. I see that fire in Michael, and I see it in Mark, and I also see it in Rhonda Patterson.
Thank you. Okay. For much of my life, I was focused on excelling in my software career, but not much else. But then I grew worried that my tombstone would read, "She wrote some nice code, but didn't do much else." For me, being called to a wider love started with recognizing that the life I had been living didn't sufficiently feed my spirit. Our congregation's vision of taking steps, however small, to make the world a better place did sound spirit-feeding to me. I also thought it should help in filling out that epitaph, too. With the hypothermia prevention shelter, an effort which covers all of Fairfax County, many different churches and organizations joined to provide meals and overnight shelters for the homeless for the winter months. The shelter that we work with was held at Epiphany Episcopal Church during Christmas week last year. We prepared and served one of the week's dinners. We also mingled with, talked with, and spent time with those being served. The concrete practical benefits being provided to those in desperate need are obvious, and much of the work is intrinsically satisfying and enjoyable. Why then is it hard, and why does it require a bit of boldness to do? Well, several times I encountered people whose conversations would gradually turn to their concerns about self-combustion, electromagnetic fields trying to reach them through the floor of the church, or the menace of quantum entanglement. Satisfying work? Definitely. Easy work? No. Nobody could pretend that knowing how to handle conversation like those I've just described is easy, but it is necessary work, because to engage with the larger problems of our world in even a small way, you must first see, hear, and talk with those directly affected by them. You must get your hands dirty. You must learn and engage.
Mm-hmm. So we've just heard from three folks speaking about the justice work that they do. And not a one of them is going to stand up here and do this. They are reaching out into the world to serve others because they've figured out who they are accountable to, how that relates to their life story, and therefore, what spiritual work they need to do to fulfill themselves and to fulfill the transformation of our world. I wish you all these gifts. Many of you engage already in bold and astounding ways. Is anybody else feeling a little bit more bold right now? Anybody feeling bold out there? All right, bold. Let's do it. Let's take on that elephant one bite at a time. Mark, I'd never heard that before, and as a vegetarian, I'm a little bit unhappy with it, but We'll go with it. Take on that giant tofurkey elephant, one bite at a time. There are questionnaires in your orders of service. These invite you to reflect on some of the justice programs that we have here. Again, if you circle yes on every single one, that's bold and amazing, it's probably not going to work. Deeply consider which of these you wish to serve, which of them really call you and will fulfill your spirit. May it be so, and amen.